According to the National Institute of Health, addiction is defined as a chronic relapsing brain disease that is characterized by compulsive drug seeking and use, despite harmful consequences. But does sacrificing sleep to play a video game or checking your phone in the middle of the night also fall into these guidelines? On this week's Techonomics, Jason Middleton chats with a New York Times best-selling author about being addicted to our devices.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. As always, this week we're looking into just exactly how irresistible our smart devices are becoming and how addiction cannot be far behind. And that's not an empty warning either. We have an author and a sociologist who examines the rise of behavioral addiction and offers some suggestions for alleviating our own addictive behavior.
Behavioral addiction is any behavior that you return to over and over again, and you do that because in the short term it feels good to you, but in the long term it turns out to undermine your well-being in at least one respect.
Here's a cautionary tale, rot from recent data. If you wake up in the middle of the night to check your phone, you are not alone. But it may be why you can't get a good night's sleep. A new study from consultancy Deloitte found that one in three people checks their smartphones in the middle of the night. Here's part two of my chat with the author of Irresistible, The Rise of Addictive Technology and the Business of Keeping Us Hooked. His name is Adam Alter. Does the prospect of more integrated augmented reality and virtual reality technology play into this? Could it be used for maybe good and evil? I mean, I understand technology is really morally agnostic, and it can be used for good or evil. And is VR, AR an opportunity maybe for some of these companies to kind of address this addictive behavior, maybe with reminders or something visual?
Yeah, I think so. I agree with you about the point that technology is agnostic, that it can be used in lots of different ways. I think because it's generally, you know, used in a consumerist capitalist context, it's generally used in a way that maximizes the bottom line. And that ends up meaning that it's not necessarily used for the good. But yeah, absolutely. I think augmented reality and virtual reality are fantastic tools for education. I've experienced a few of these newest platforms myself, and they are phenomenal experiences. I mean, they give you something that you couldn't possibly get any other way, and they're only becoming more sophisticated. I mean, you imagine if you're a person who doesn't have the means to travel and you want to experience other parts of the world, imagine you could just immerse yourself for an hour in a virtual space that gives you all of that, all the experiences that you might have if you were traveling. There's a form of deep education there that you couldn't get any other way, and I think that's deeply beneficial. But there is the concern that the life that you create for people virtually is so appealing that if you give them the option, they'd always pick that virtual life over the imperfect, complex, messy real world. And so you want to make sure that doesn't happen.
We're speaking with Adam Alter. He's a behavioral psychologist. He's also the author of a new book, Irresistible, The Rise of Addictive Technology and the Business of Keeping Us Hooked. And obviously, Dr. Alter, you are a thought leader in this space. My follow-up question to that statement would be, are you a lonely thought leader in this space, or have you seen this book help get you some traction?
No, I think there is a pretty big movement now that's consistent with what I've been saying in this book. I think it's all starting to come together, which is pretty gratifying. A lot of companies are starting to contact me. They're recognizing that this is an issue. Some of them are fairly large companies. Some of them are smaller. I think the real titans in the tech world are still taking a bit of time to get there. But, you know, if consumers start reading enough about the issue, recognizing how they're being controlled and moved in different directions by these companies, they might start to demand something different. I think of it a little bit like we used to think of green marketing or environmental marketing, that it used to be a competitive advantage if you were a company that said, we don't dump pollutants into the water. Mm-hmm. And people would say, well, I like you more than the other company, so I'll use you instead of the others. But now you can't really be a successful company. You can't succeed and you can't exist without doing the right thing by the environment, because that's what consumers demand. And I think in time, consumers, once they're wise to these issues, will demand something similar from tech companies. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, where we should be headed and where we are headed.
I think you're right. I think the market forces and the shareholder forces from these larger publicly traded companies will come around eventually. And that's the tipping point I think that you're looking for as well.
It is, exactly. That's what I'd hope for.
Dr. Alter, to follow up on the shareholder/market economy pressures for these bigger companies, what other consumer-level kind of things can you suggest?
Yeah. So one of the things that's really interesting about these newer forms of technology is that they've eradicated what I call stopping cues. So a stopping cue is a signal that it's time to move on to do something different. And an example of this is when you're reading, say, a newspaper or a magazine or a book. You get to the end of a chapter or an article, and that's an implicit suggestion that it's time to do something different. And even if you keep reading till the end, eventually you get to the end. It does have a bottom, the experience, and when you get to the end, you move on to the next thing. And that was true of much of what we were consuming in the 20th century. It was even true of video, you know, or TV. You'd watch an episode of a show, it would end, and then you'd have to wait a week for the next one. A lot of the tech we're experiencing now doesn't have these stopping cues built in. It's bottomless. That's true of social media. The feeds on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat are bottomless. You could just keep sitting on the platform for basically forever and never sleep, never eat, and you'd be able to just keep churning through content. The same is true of the way we consume the news online. The same is true of email, of messaging. These things just don't have an end. And so a lot of the companies that want you to keep using their platforms are very smart about eradicating those stopping cues. So I think it's up to us as consumers to reinsert them. And there are a number of different ways of doing that. The best thing I think we can do is not to say, let's roll back the clock to the 1950s where we don't use tech anymore, because there are people who try to do that, and I think it's difficult and not what I would suggest.
Right.
But what we can do, I think, is to build in certain stop gaps, things like saying every dinner time, no matter where I am, whether I'm alone with someone else at home in a restaurant, wherever I may be, dinner time is a tech-free time. Mm-hmm. No matter who I'm with, we will all abide by that rule, and we'll take our screens and put them elsewhere. And I know this works because I've spoken to enough people who've done it that they say in the beginning it was hard. There's a withdrawal period, as there would be with any drug or anything else you're addicted to. And for a little while, you struggle with it. But once you get past that after a few days, it feels like the experience without screens is so much richer and more interesting for the absence of those screens. And people will often expand it. They'll go beyond that initial time and they'll say, you know what, I think I also want to do it for the hour after dinner, or I want to do it on Saturday or Sunday where I'll put my phone on airplane mode so I can use it as a camera, but it's not actually going to transmit anything, no phone calls, right. No messages and things like that. So I think that's the best thing we can do is reinsert these stopping rules into our lives that prevent us from using tech constantly and consistently.
You know, at the top of the interview, I mentioned Nir Eyal, a guest on the show. He's a marketer, and his book is called Hooked. You're a behavioral psychologist, and your book is called Irresistible. So it just kind of makes sense. How about we build better boundaries? Maybe that's a marketing term we can help people kind of – people are already used to the three Bs, to be you know, Better Business Bureau, right? So maybe build better boundaries. I don't know. I'm just trying to find something we can anti-market some of this stuff, because it is awfully addictive. It's just too easy sometimes.
Agreed, yes.
Dr. Alter,
I like the BBB.
And I would, well, let me just thank you. Dr. Alter, thank you for your time today. Thank you for a wonderful book and for shining a light on this. And I mean that very literally, because the screens are kind of taking a lot of our time away from other parts of our life that we need to take back.
Well, thanks for having me, and thanks for doing the interview.
That was Adam Alter. He's the author of Irresistible, The Rise of Addictive Technology and the Business of Keeping Us Hooked. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show and podcast. We hope you had fun. We had fun pulling it together. Let us know what you think. We are at facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. We post the music we choose for each week's program on that page as well. And we also live at kgoradio.com/Techonomics if you're looking for links or contact information for us or the guests. For producer Liana Wilcox and executive producer Mike Anthony, my name is Jason Middleton. You've been listening to Techonomics. Thanks for that, and have great weeks, everybody.